to our old sinful lives. So how can we continue living with sin? Did you forget that all of us became part of Christ when we were baptized? We shared his death in our baptism, and when we were baptized, we were buried with Christ and shared his death. So just as Christ was raised from the dead by the wonderful power of the Father, we also can live a new life. So what should we do? Should we sin because we are under grace and not under the law? No. Surely you know that when you give yourselves like slaves to someone, then you are really slaves of that person. The person you obey is your master. You can follow sin, which brings spiritual death, or you can obey God, which makes you right with him. In the past, you were slaves to sin. Sin controlled you. But thank God you fully obeyed the things that you were taught. You were made free from sin, and now you are slaves to goodness.
Thank you, Dan. I love what Martin Luther said concerning baptism. He said that when he is tempted by Satan, reminded that he is not a worthy Christian, that he has done wrong, he simply says, "I have been baptized." Oh, what courage that gives the Christian person. William Willimon, who is an outstanding preacher from the Methodist denomination, has taught me a lot of things, and he says that the one thing that he says when he baptizes someone is to remember your baptism and be thankful. Now, he talks about it about a community thing. It's a community. You're not just baptized individually, but you're baptized into Christ and into a community, into a family. And taking off from that, many times when I baptize someone, I like to make it a community event. So if I know that someone's going to be baptized in time, I will try to have their whole family setting up the front of the church so that they can be a part of it, so they can hear the testimony of this person professing Christ as their Lord. And then oftentimes when that person stands before the whole group of people, whether they're family, friends, the whole church community, I'll oftentimes ask the whole church to stand and reaffirm what we call the Great Confession, or reaffirm their confession that Jesus Christ is their Lord. Then have that person to make that confession. And then baptize them in water. Now, one time I had a person to say, "This seems very strange, this community baptism and this idea of everyone confessing." And you know, I admit it is. It's a very strange thing. But you know, baptism is itself a very strange thing. And we should never try to normalize it or to make it so ordinary, because it is something that requires a radical crisis in life. It requires a rebirth. And I think Christianity requires a birth again and again, a transformation in our thoughts. Now, what I want to say about baptism, I think, is on target with these three thoughts right there. But so many times, our thoughts wander away from what Christ, what the Bible has to say about those things. I was raised up knowing all of these scriptures about baptism, and maybe you were too, because my particular denomination, my particular church, argued a lot about baptism. It was a very argumentative type of thing. We argued with a lot of people about it. And so I became pretty good at arguing about it, knowing who should be baptized and know what they should be said, and maybe their arms should be read. The various traditions go along about that. And I always wonder, because I believe that baptism was immersion, what would happen if somebody, for example, flew their fist out of the water or their toe came up? Would we have to rebaptize them? Well, my good friend and elder Dave Backus one time baptized a man back in the 70s, had an afro. And the afro didn't go under the water, and people complained about it. Somebody said he wasn't fully immersed. And the man didn't want to be baptized again, and Dave didn't want to baptize him again. He said, "Well, I guess we'll just let the hair go to hell and let the man be saved." And you know, that shows sometimes the technicalities that we have about what should be a very natural type of thing. Now, what I want to introduce to you, this may sound strange going with parables here, but what Brother Dan read to us from Romans really isn't talking about baptism per se. It doesn't tell us all the ins and outs about it, but it's telling us that it is a something that associates us with Jesus Christ. Did you notice those verses that talked about being united with Christ, buried with Him, raising with Him? Oh, isn't that something very natural for a person that says, I believe that Jesus is Lord? You know, I think sometimes our faith goes off track because we think it's about us. I think sometimes in the midst of our testifying, and we talk about testimonies, and CR talks a lot about testimonies, I think sometimes it's easy to think that it's about us. It's about, for example, how much we know. Isn't that true? If only I knew enough, I'd get baptized. If only I knew enough. And sometimes it doesn't always take, because sometimes you see a person baptized and that's kind of it. It doesn't seem to gel on them. And so many times when people are talking about their faith, it's kind of almost as if they're studying it to see if Christianity is better than, say, the Muslim faith or the Buddhist faith or some other kind. And then if we can get all the answers out, if we can figure out if there's really an apologetic reason to believe in Christianity versus the others, then we'll step forward. Is that it? But you know, Paul and Jesus never approached it that way. It was never about having the right knowledge. It was about being touched by the theme that we constantly say in the parables, that it was about the love and the forgiveness of God. And you notice that verse that Dan read there? It's the one that you begin to obey that it begins to count for. And so, whoever you obey, that really shows who your master is. You see, this baptism thing is really about power. You see that? It's not about how much you know. It's not about how much you can rationalize your faith. It's about saying that Jesus Christ is Lord and Him having power over your life. Believing that you are loved and forgiven and now you are so united with Him. It's about identity. Do you see that? And when it's practiced that way, when you come to say that Jesus is Lord, what a wonderful identifying thing that is. Now, having said all of this, I want to relate this to the parables, because we know this thing about baptism relating us to Christ. But did you know the parables talk a great deal about Christ relating identity to us? I want us to remember these parables that we've gone through, that we've labored through, that we've struggled with and delighted in. I want us to remember some of these stories, how that connects to His identity as He comes to identify with us. Now, what I want to say this morning is that parables have a purpose of provoking crisis in us. Isn't that true? A crisis. And I think so many times churches get it off base. Kind of like I was talking about with the baptismal thing, that it's an argumentative thing, that our faith is about trying to reason everything out and find out, discover what's the best, if it's going to help our life. And maybe we're approaching it that way. Maybe church has become something that is just kind of something civil, something helpful, something that will make us a better person, something that will kind of fix our problems and bring solutions and resolutions to our life. Is that it? Is that what you're looking for? That may be the way we're looking at it, and if that is, at some point we will be sorely in crisis if we hear the message of the good news. I'm going to suggest to you what Martin Luther said is true when he said this: the glory of God is to make us enemies of ourselves. Now, I want you to think about that as we run through some of these parables. Because I believe the thing that we want in this world is terribly somebody to fix us, to help us have self-esteem, someone that can bring our problems and find some resolution. And if that's true, you're going to have a crisis. And the parables are going to help you find it. You're going to have a crisis because God is going to confront you with yourself. And hopefully He's going to do it with the person of Jesus Christ, to show that He is the center of your devotion, your love, and of your forgiveness. Remember that strange parable in Luke 16 about this wealthy man, this wealthy man, and he found out that his manager had been cheating on him. Remember that? It's a very strange thing. But he calls him in and says, "Hey, what is this? You've been cheating me out of all this time. You're fired." And the guy says, "Well, okay, if I got to do that, well, then I'll go out and I'll let me get the books in order." So he begins to call the guys in, and he says, "Okay, I know you owe my master $10,000, but just write the check out to $5,000 today, and write me a couple of $2,000 here." And the next one, he says, "Okay, you owe the master, say, $30,000, but if you'll pay the check today for $20,000, write me a check for $5,000. You see what he does? He kind of embezzles. And we don't know what to do with that because the guy's a crook. What do we need to see here is that Jesus is identifying himself with this crook. And it really kind of hurts our feelings. It's embarrassing. Many times in the early church, they didn't know what to do with it. They said, "This has got to be an addition or something. Something is amiss here." Let me tell you, have you ever seen a movie about Jesse James, the outlaw, and you're rooting for the outlaws? Or you're seeing a movie about Robin Hood? He's sticking it to the rich, and he's giving it to the poor. Well, you see, here's this guy, only he had given it to the poor. He's sticking it to the rich, and he's feathering his own pocket. And we can't abide by that, but yet when the guy comes in, he says, "You know, this crook is a genius." You ever said that about someone that's scamming you? "Yeah, this guy's a genius. He's a rotten..." You see, in a sense, that's what Jesus is saying. I'm identifying with this crook because he has found what it takes. And the eternal verities of God aren't going to be found by the way we keep our books, so to speak, our moral books, the way we do righteousness, and the way we do civility, and the way we do, can I say this, the way we do church. But Jesus has found something beyond that, something that almost sounds crooked, almost sounds, it doesn't sound fair. And isn't that the word we've been using through the prayer? It doesn't sound fair. And the point about grace is it's not fair. It's not fair. And then you see these parables that we've really kind of, we have really made them shine. We've made them look good. Like this guy that was a rebellious teenager or maybe a 20-year-old, but he went off and after demanding this money from Pop, he went off and had a drinking party. He caroused around in the worst possible way. And I mean, it's an embarrassment. The story is an absolute embarrassment. And so when we talk about this prodigal son coming home, I want you to know if this happened in everyday life today, we'd be squealing about somebody's son and daughter because it is not right. It's a shame. It's a dirty shame. But when the guy gets off in the far country and he runs out of money and eventually he says, "You know, here I'm starving and I'm looking all I've done." And the scripture says he begins to reflect upon it. And he doesn't say, "Look, I'm going home to get fixed. I'm going home to try to find a solution." It does say, "I'll go home and see if I can just be a servant so I can have something to eat." But what it does say is he came to himself and said, "I have sinned." This is the whole point. His testimony is not, "Look what a life I've lived. Look what a terrible, horrible life that I've done." His testimony is, "I'm going to go to my pop, my dad, and say I've sinned and see what he'll do for me." And the whole point of this parable is, even though it's embarrassing, it confronts us because we see ourselves like that in so many ways, don't we? We see ourselves as fallen, and it's an embarrassment to the church. It's an embarrassment to the faith that someone would go out and so squander someone's name. You see, we, in a sense, are an embarrassment to our Heavenly Father. We need to remember from where we've come from, where we've fallen, because grace is about reaching down to someone that has really bottomed out but is willing to say, "I don't have it made. And I'm never going to have it made because I've lost all my opportunities." This grace thing is about what God has done as he wraps his arms around this person. But what I want us to see here is that Jesus is not asking you to come for help. He's not asking you to come to get the right answers or to get your doctrine right. He's asking you to come and to die. Jesus says, "I'll help you die to yourself." Isn't that it? And then if you'll die to yourself, you will get grace that is so real that we'll celebrate with a party. We'll dance and we'll celebrate. We'll put new shoes on you, a new ring on you, and we will give you an identity that's found because you have discovered. Now, what I want you to see in these parables here is that Jesus is associating his identity with our fallen humanity. And that all the way through these parables is what I want you to remember. It is literally an embarrassment for a church that wants to help people just step up to the plate and address their problems and find solutions. It's an embarrassment. And Jesus Christ puts us in a crisis mode, all of us. When I come to these party parables that we talked about, remember all those? I mean, he goes to the parties of the good people, the Pharisees, and he embarrasses them right in public. And Jesus is an embarrassment to good people. Because what did he say? You ought to have a party and have who in there? You ought to have people that can't pay you back. You ought to have the crippled. You ought to have the blind. You ought to have people that are uninvited. In fact, when some of the parables were given, he said the people didn't come. They had excuses. They had all kinds of reasons. And we can kind of make that, people give all kinds of excuses for not coming to church. People do this and they do that. I'm sure people got excuses today. That's not the reason behind this. The remembrance that we want to remember here is that Jesus Christ is saying there are people that are absolutely an embarrassment because of their lives and their shapes they're in. They had no thought at all that they'd ever come into religion, but all of a sudden they're compelled by someone that brought them into the party. They come in, and so Jesus Christ is saying what he'll do is invite people that are willing to come and help them learn to die to themselves. Now, that takes a whole new picture, and I keep saying that because I want us to remember that Jesus is trying to help us identify with him as he identifies with fallen humanity, the humanity that is an embarrassment to us, an embarrassment to good people, and sometimes an embarrassment to the church, but is not an embarrassment to him. That's what we want to remember out of this parable. What we want to see, in conclusion, is that so many of the times the church has, we've forgotten. In fact, one of my favorite authors, Robert Cannon, says that in many churches, if you're looking for the gospel, you need to find it in the lost and found section of the church because it ain't out in front. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? Why would he say such a thing like that? Because in many churches, you're looking for the kind of people that have got the wealth, the power, the prestige. You've got a message that kind of says, let's help people move forward. Let's help people find their problems. Let's help them become better people. Let's help them fix themselves. But you see, when the crisis comes in your life, it's not about fixing your life, and it's not trying to find out what's better for you and help you can move forward. You see, your identity that we've talked about, from Romans, is about helping you to learn to die to yourself. That's the important thing. And only when we learn to die can we be found alive in Jesus Christ. And that's the reason why Jesus Christ came and gave us these parables, is to help us see that he's willing to die what we perceive to be a holiness of God that is untouchable and unremoved from humankind. And he says, no, not at all. I'm coming down to this world. And I'm going among the lowest people of all. In fact, I'm even willing to die as a sinner, having been branded as a sinner, having been branded as someone that is an embarrassment and someone that, oh my goodness. The one that I even left out, there's a guy that went to the temple and prayed. You remember that parable? There's one praying on this side, one praying on this one. One is thanking God about all that he did. And the other one is saying, God, I just can't make it. I'm sorry. I'm a sinner. I'm lousy. What I want us to see in all these parables and remember is that Jesus is wanting us to come and to die to ourself. Now, if we haven't learned to die to ourself, we'll never learn about our identity. We may get baptized for some other reason. It may be just as cute as arguing about the hair or the foot or something else. But it's not about the baptism that Jesus wants us to aspire to. It may be arguing about which church you're in or how much water you got or something else. But Jesus is saying that the identity that I want is that you have come to follow me. It's the kind of identity the Apostle Paul said when he said, I have died with Jesus Christ. I died with Jesus Christ. You see, the Apostle Paul was of that community that believed in hearing God. And the way he heard the message was to say, when God speaks, we listen. We listen to his word. We listen to his faith community. The only problem that Paul had is when God said, I want you to listen to my servant Jesus. And he said, huh? Jesus? The one that I've been persecuting? The one that's an embarrassment? That's the one. You see, that's the problem and that's the crisis that Paul had. And so the man who wrote these words about baptism is the one that said, I died with Christ. I have been buried in baptism with Christ that I might rise and be under his power. Baptism is about power. It's about saying, not just in words, but in meaning, Jesus is Lord. And my life is no longer my own. It's not about fixing my life. It's not about resolving to be a better person, a more decent person, a good person. Although those are things are not bad, that's not what it's about. It's about rising to follow him. And Jesus says, that's the kind of person I want to work with. Dying to self. Because you've realized that I came from heaven so that I could identify with you, the less, the least, and the lost. I want you to remember these lessons because that is what gospel is about. It's not about what we're contemplating doing, whether in baptism. It's not about what we're thinking about doing in church. It's about what God has done in the person of Jesus Christ as he reached out to you with imminent love and forgiveness and saying, can you identify with that? Because if you can, you're welcome. That's what baptism is about. That's what these parables are about. And I hope that you'll remember that every day of your Christian life. Is that what you'd like to respond to as we now sing this invitation hymn?